You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Keely Boltina. Coming up, the Trump campaign plans to request a recount in Wisconsin and has filed a lawsuit to halt counting in Michigan. We'll talk with a constitutional law professor about what happens next.
Now, unofficially, it looks like Joe Biden won Wisconsin and our 10 electoral votes by about 20,000 votes over President Trump. As we just heard, the Trump campaign announced today that it will seek a recount. The Associated Press also just called Michigan for Joe Biden.
It also appears that none of our 8 congressional seats flipped. So Republicans will hang on to their 5 districts in Wisconsin and Democrats have their 3.
In the state legislature, Republicans are hoping to pick up a few seats in the Assembly and Senate and win veto-proof majorities in both chambers. They came up short, but will still control the legislature for the next 2 years.
So what do you make of all of this? Share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. What do you hope comes out of 2 more years of divided government in Wisconsin? Do you think the parties can and should work together? 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas@wpr.org.
We've got 2 former state lawmakers with us now. Michelle Lichens-Voss is a former Republican member of the state assembly. She represented part of the Fox Valley. Michelle, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And Dana Walks is a former Democratic state representative from Eau Claire. Dana, good to have you with us as well.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Let's start with you, Dana. Just your overall impressions of where we're at right now, national and state levels. How are you feeling today?
Well, I'm feeling pretty good, to be quite frank. I think we're going to have a new president. I think that the outstanding votes in Nevada and Arizona are going to swing Biden's direction. They're fairly urban votes and suburban votes, so it should bode well for President-elect Biden. And I think in general, I think on a statewide level, I'm very proud of Wisconsin, how this went. There are some trends that are really interesting in this state and nationally. I mean, you see suburban votes swinging to the Democratic side. You see perhaps some rural votes swinging a little further to the Republican side. So there are some interesting trends that are developing. But overall, I feel very good today, and I think that we'll have a new president, and we've picked up a couple seats in the legislature.
And Michelle, how are you feeling well into post-election day now?
I'm feeling pretty good today as well, actually. I think we had been told for months by all of the mainstream media and all of the pollsters out there that it was going to be a huge blue wave across the entire country last night, and that's not what happened at all. I think we in Wisconsin are very familiar with close races, and so the fact that there were only 20,000 votes separating President Trump with Joe Biden is really no surprise to us here. But the fact that the assembly, I mean, the Democrats had so much money this year, that more money than they could have dreamed of having, and yet they were only able to take out 2 assembly incumbents, and yet the senators flipped 2 Senate seats. You know, that's amazing. So I think Republicans are doing pretty well in Wisconsin.
Yeah, Dana, not a great day for Wisconsin Democrats in the state legislature.
Well, we picked up a seat, Jim Mott. He lost. He's a Republican over in the Mequon area. And Rob Hutton, he lost. And congratulations to Deb Andraca and Sarah Rodriguez. I think those are good pickups. It is true we lost the seat, the Hudson State Senate seat, and we lost the Green Bay State Senate seat, Dave Hansen's seat that he held for many, many years. So there's some disappointing sides to this as well. But I think the future bodes well. And to be quite frank, I think what this may bring forth is redistricting that'll be more fair and will represent the middle of the road vote as opposed to the 2 extremes.
And Michelle, I wanted to ask before we move away from the presidential race too far, the Trump campaign says they're going to be asking for a recount in Wisconsin. It's within that 1% margin where you can request a recount and then pay for it. It's not on the House. It wasn't quite close enough for that. Former Governor Walker tweeted a couple times this morning saying 20,000 votes, that's a tall order to recount, ultimately supporting that idea, though. What are you watching for with a potential recount, I guess, again, here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, right. Actually, I think what's more important than the recount is the canvas,
sure,
because that's where we would find if, you know, vote tallies were put in the wrong column, as we found in the past, and that could definitely make some changes. I would have to agree with Governor Walker that it is highly unlikely that we're going to find, you know, a 20,000 or at least a 10,000 vote change with a recount. But I do think it will be interesting when the canvas is completed to see if the vote totals stay the same way they are currently.
We're talking to two former state lawmakers getting their reactions to yesterday's elections, this week's elections, I don't know, this year's elections. They keep going. Michelle Lichtenvoss is with us, former Republican Assembly member. Dana Walks, former Democrat in the state assembly. All right, let's look toward next year. One thing I think we can take to the bank is we're going to have a Democratic governor in Wisconsin and a Republican legislature. I don't think there's any surprise coming out of that. Let's start with you, Michelle. Do you see ways for those two parties, the two branches of government, to work together on some of the big issues facing the state?
Absolutely. And I think it's historical that most oftentimes governors of both parties, Jim Doyle worked with Republican legislators, Tommy Thompson worked with Democrat legislators. I mean, it's just historical that usually the governor does reach out to the legislators. But this governor has been refusing to meet with and talk to our legislature. So I hope that in the next few days that our legislative leaders are able to reach out to the governor and somehow Governor Evers agrees to meet with them and they can find some common ground to continue to move Wisconsin forward.
And Dana, how about you?
Well, I look at it this way. I mean, when the Democrats and the Republicans worked together, we did extraordinary things. I mean, we literally flew to the moon when in Congress the Democrats and the Republicans worked together. Now, I disagree with Michelle. I respectfully disagree. I think Tony Evers has been reaching the olive branch out to the Republicans since his first State of the State address. I sat in the balcony watching that address, and he was trying to reach out there, and it fell on deaf ears. I mean, we've got a pandemic in this state. We have a very serious problem in this state. We need to work together, and I think the legislature, the Republicans in the legislature, have been really fighting Tony Evers on this very, very important issue. Now, I am hoping that everybody can sit down now and try to get along and try to accomplish some of the business for the people of the state of Wisconsin. I look to Republican leadership in the Senate and the Assembly to extend an olive branch. Let's sit down and start working on some of these issues. There's nothing more important than this. This pandemic is deadly. And it's time for people to roll sleeves up and work together on this instead of fighting about it.
Well, I'll say I've had great conversations with a bipartisan pair of legislators over the last few years. They get together, they find an issue, might be, gaps in mental health coverage in northern Wisconsin, or opioids and advancing Representative Nygren's HOPE agenda. You know, finding problems, reaching across the aisle, working together to fix them, maybe setting aside the big stuff for a little bit. Michelle, is there a case to be made for, doing that, playing small ball? Maybe it's not the big high-profile issue, but we're getting stuff done.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the speaker created a task force already this year to deal with racism and police issues. There are Republicans and Democrats on that committee, plus a number of just regular folks out there. I think that committee, because they are not rushing to pass something just for political points, but when they dig deep and really try to come up with solutions, we are going to find bipartisan support for that. So we've got a history of that in Wisconsin. I think we are going to see that continue. But I also know we need a governor who is willing to work with the legislators. And we will see what happens in the next couple days if he's willing to do that or not.
And Dana, your thoughts on that ability to find the little issues that are important in parts of the state and work together on them?
Well, I used to be on the Judiciary Committee in the legislature, and we talked about Jim Ott earlier today, and he was the chair of the Judiciary Committee, and I spent 6 years as the ranking Democrat on that committee. And, we had a lot of times that we were completely on the opposite side of things, but we did pass a bill dealing with some complicated annuity stuff. And that bill is literally being other states are patterning their legislation after that bill that Jim and I wrote. We worked really hard on that. It was a special committee session through the summer, and we were able to roll up our sleeves and deal with a complicated legal issue, and we got a bill out that we're proud of, and it's literally being patterned after across the nation. But, you know, earlier I talked a little bit about the redistricting issue that's just about to pop, it rear its ugly head. You know, this is the time that everybody's got to sit down and find a way to redistrict a legislature, the legislative seats. The way it's set now, you have to be to the far left or you have to be to the far right. There's really not much room in the middle. And I think that there's a hunger out there in Wisconsin and throughout this nation. There's a hunger for a place in the middle. And I think most people would prefer to see middle of the road legislation and middle of the road government and functioning government. And I think one of the things that would lead to that is legislative districts that are fair.
We'll get Michelle's thoughts on that in just a moment. We're talking to two former state lawmakers about the results of this year's election and what happens next. Dana Walks, Democrat, Michelle Lichens-Voss, Republican, both former members of the state assembly.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What are your hopes or your fears regarding those new legislative maps for the state? How do you feel about where the election results stand right now? Give us a call and join in at 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at Central Time WPR.
We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Keeley Boltina.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're looking at the results from the fall elections, mostly focusing on the state legislature, also touching on the presidency and Congress. Our guests are Michelle Lichens-Voss and Dana Walks, former members of the state assembly, Republican and Democrat, respectively. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you hope to see now from divided government, continued divided government in Wisconsin, Democrat, governor, Republicans, legislature? Do you see ways they can work together? What are your thoughts, your general reactions to the elections and what we know about them so far? 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Michelle, just a few moments ago, Dana was talking about the upcoming redistricting in Wisconsin. We got the census. We'll get those numbers. The new lines get drawn. What are your thoughts looking ahead at that?
Yeah. With the maps, everyone talks about gerrymandering all the time. But if you want to look at some of the numbers from last night, and Democrats tend to live very close together in urban areas, and Republicans tend to live more in the townships and the villages in the surrounding areas. If you look at the numbers, Dane County had 260,000 people who voted for Biden and only 78,000 people who voted for Donald Trump. It would be very difficult to have somehow a Republican representation in Dane County, and I think for everyone who lives there, they completely understand that. So, and if you lived in my area in southeastern Wisconsin, if you don't live in the city of Racine or the city of Kenosha or the city of Janesville, the rest of the representation, all of the townships voted for a Republican. So it is very, very difficult to, make those districts all 50-50 when you have to reach into cities to get more Democrat votes, if that makes any sense. So I'm very confident that the legislature is going to be able to create maps that the governor is actually going to sign. I think that's just the way that the demographics work in the state of Wisconsin.
Data, Democrats self-cluster is the argument.
Yes.
Well, you know, that's really not the case. I mean, if you take a look at this electorate, now I've not seen the raw numbers from Wisconsin yet. I'm not sure that they've been published yet. I doubt it, but perhaps they have, but I haven't seen it. But take a look at where the Democratic votes are moving. They're moving into the suburbs. Now, it's true that we have enclaves where there's a lot of Democrats in the urban centers, but they're also spreading out. It's into the suburbs. I mean, Assemblyman Hutton is a Brookfield district. Jim Ott is also a Mequon district, which is a suburb district. And you can see what happened. The Democrats are spreading out. And if you take a look at the Washington Post put out an interesting exit poll analysis of Wisconsin the other day. And if you take a look at it, you know, the Democratic Party is reaching into different age groups that they, you know, frankly, they're really, really doing well with young voters and non-white voters and female voters. And those folks are all over the state. Now, it's true in rural areas, the Republicans have been doing better. But that's, you know, that's going to change, too, because I think the Democratic Party is going to swing and be more receptive to folks in the rural districts.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Ryan is with us in Superior. Ryan, hi.
Hey.
What did you want to bring up, Ryan?
Can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
Yeah. So I just basically, it's sort of on topic, but I wanted to sort of say that. Now that this election is finally wrapping up, I want to know what is Wisconsin going to do about the massive rise in COVID cases here in our state that's just running off the map. The Republicans in the state legislature have been just trying everything they can to sort of prevent making any action to take on it or any sort of safety protocols or anything like that. And now that the person who's been cheering for like no COVID response whatsoever has been voted out of office in the presidency, I'm hoping that the Republican legislators here in this state are going to start taking a more science-based and correct standpoint on this issue.
Ryan, thanks a lot for calling in. Again, the presidential race, not done or called completely yet. But Michelle, Ryan raising concerns about how Republicans in the legislature have responded to the pandemic. Your thoughts?
Sure. Well, they did pass a very comprehensive bill this spring when the pandemic first happened, and they gave the governor millions of dollars to spend on his own to do whatever he wanted to do that was necessary to keep the state of Wisconsin safe. He's chosen not to spend most of that money, actually. We don't know what he's doing. Hopefully he's going to respond to that soon. But when Governor Evers was asked recently, what could the legislators have done? He didn't have an answer. He wasn't sure what they could have done to make Wisconsin safer. If we see across the country, across the world, the number of COVID cases are increasing. And so I don't necessarily think this is something that the government can fix. I think people individually need to make sure they're washing their hands, that they're wearing their masks, that they're not getting together in large groups. And but we'll see. Our legislators, you know, are going to be talking hopefully to the governor. We'll see if they've come up with any ideas, any suggestions on what they can do just to make it safer. But I'd be curious what other people recommend other than closing absolutely everything. It is interesting when they talk about closing everything, everyone in the private sector would lose their income and their jobs. But most people who work for the government and the state would continue to receive a paycheck. So that'll be interesting to watch.
Dana, your thoughts on pandemic response?
Well, I think that the Republicans have made this a political issue. I don't think there's any question about it. You take a look at what the president's done. You take a look at the actions that went on in court in this state. Tony Evers has been asking people to put masks on, and he's issued critical health concern orders. And what happens? They end up in the Supreme Court in that Palm decision, which is one of the most— it's a very unusual decision, or the result of that decision. It's like the Supreme Court went through gymnastics, the conservatives on the Supreme Court, in order to overrule health, safety, rules, laws, and orders. Now, here's the deal. If you don't think you should put on a mask, well, if you extend that logic, or I would say illogic, extend it a little bit, that should, you know, the same logic would allow people to drive cars drunk. I mean, that's ridiculous. Put a mask on, you protect the neighborhood. You protect other citizens. You protect people in Wisconsin. Don't put one on and you're going to spread that COVID. Same thing.
Time for one more caller. Brad is with us in Lake Geneva. Brad, hi.
Hey, how you doing? I have no problem with the masks. You know, I agree with that. That's something we need to all take precautions there. Yeah, I'm a right myself. I voted for Trump. You know, it does look like he's going to lose, and I am upset about it. But I'm not going out, and I'm not burning buildings, and I'm not breaking stuff. And if that doesn't say it all right there, which side and which what's going on here, I just want to say this. I hope we can work together, but I think that these big tech companies and this whole thing was designed by these major left, Facebook, Apple, Google, this whole thing. They're all left. They censor the media. They filtrate what they want put out there. you know, the numbers and the COVID numbers are skewed. They're not
okay,
wrong.
Brad. I'll wrap it up there. The COVID numbers seem pretty legit, but Brad expressing, I'll start with his first concern there. Dana, he says, "Hey, I'm willing to be a good sport. My guy lost, and he doesn't feel like Democrats were, for example, when Donald Trump was elected." What would you say to that?
Well, I'd say Brad's a darn good citizen. You know, I'll tell you what, we've had a couple hundred years of a republic, and I want to keep this republic. And people that are threatening violence and people that are rioting, they're dead wrong. That's not what this country's about. You know, remember, we used to fly to the moon when we worked together. We really did. And we can do it again. And I think in Wisconsin, flying to the moon is sitting down and dealing with this health crisis that we've got on our hands. That needs to happen. And the
Michelle,
Republican leadership needs to stop fighting and actually help.
And Michelle, in our last minute, your thoughts on ways to work together in the future after a divisive election?
You know, again, we do have a history of working together. I am certain that if President Trump does not win re-election, that he will peacefully and graciously hand over the White House to the next president, because that's what our country does. There is an opportunity for folks to work together in Wisconsin. I just have to reiterate again, and I hope people look at what's been happening over the last few months, but the governor certainly hasn't been willing to work out or reach out and work with our legislators. So hopefully we can see something happen positively in the future and they can work together.
We'll leave it there. Michelle, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
And Dana, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Dana Wachs is a former Democratic state representative from Eau Claire. Also with us, Michelle Lichens-Voss, former Republican member of the state assembly from the Fox Valley. We talked to them about this week's elections for the state legislature, Congress, and the presidency.
Coming up, we'll get a check on the latest news, and then we'll talk with an election law expert about legal challenges that could come from the Trump campaign and if they could affect voting results. I'm Keeley Boltina.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Keeley Boltina. As elections officials are processing and counting presidential votes, we're reporting on developments. Join us tonight at 8 for an NPR election update special. We'll have the latest election news from around the country here on Wisconsin Public Radio. You can also follow developments, including Wisconsin election results, at WPR.org.
Now, the Trump campaign says it's requesting a recount of ballots in Wisconsin and has also filed lawsuits in Michigan and Pennsylvania to stop vote counting as those states finish up their tabulations.
And last night, the president made false claims of voter fraud and said he would be going to the Supreme Court to, quote, stop all voting. His campaign has long said it would be willing to take legal action to challenge results. Now that we're seeing those challenges, we're talking with a constitutional expert about what the law actually says.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about what the Trump campaign can or can't challenge in court? Are you curious about whether a lawsuit like the one we're seeing in Michigan has any legal traction? Do you have questions about how recounts work? And do you feel confident about the validity of the results in Wisconsin and elsewhere? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org.
Robert Yablon is an associate professor at the University of Wisconsin Law School. He's also an expert on election and constitutional law. He clerked for Supreme Court Justices Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Sonia Sotomayor. Rob, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start actually last night with the president's comments when he falsely declared victory in the election. We still don't know who won. He talked about appealing to the Supreme Court as votes were still being counted. And let's take a listen.
We want the law to be used in a proper manner. So we'll be going to the U.S. Supreme Court. We want all voting to stop. We don't want them to find any ballots at 4 o'clock in the morning and add them to the list. Okay?
Now, there were no new votes being cast when he said that. The president seems to be talking about whether states are allowed to keep counting ballots or accepting those that come in where it's allowed. So first, I mean, is it possible for a campaign to make an official request to the Supreme Court to weigh in or act on those concerns?
So for the most part, it's not possible to go directly to the Supreme Court. And so, you know, when the president, first of all, says he's going to go to the Supreme Court to stop the voting, as you point out, the voting has already stopped. What he really seems to be talking about is counting of ballots. And there are two types of counting activities that may be going on at this point. One is counting the ballots that were cast and received by Election Day. And there is, and he has filed a lawsuit in Michigan that seeks to interrupt that counting, but that counting process is ongoing. The second type of counting that he may take issue with is the counting of ballots that were received by, or that were postmarked by Election Day, but are going to be received in the coming days. And there are some states, including Pennsylvania, but not including Wisconsin, where the current state of the law is that those ballots will be counted. The president is going to want to stop that. And there is already one pending suit in Pennsylvania that has already made its way up to the Supreme Court on that issue. And the president recently sought to intervene in that case. And so that's the one instance in which he has a fairly direct path to the Supreme Court, but not in these other instances.
Does the Trump campaign need actual evidence of irregularities to take action on this, or can it pursue legal challenges without identifying that at this point?
So in order to file a lawsuit, you need to identify a legal claim. And that legal claim may rest on specific irregularities. The Michigan lawsuit does not rest on any irregularities that were found with the count, but is instead a lawsuit where the president and his campaign are complaining about not having sufficient access to the counting. In Pennsylvania, the case that is about the late counting of ballots, the argument there is that although the state Supreme Court authorized those ballots to be counted as long as they're received by Friday, that decision is one that by federal law can only be made by the state legislature. And so the claim there isn't about a specific irregularity, but just that the state didn't use the right mechanism for extending the deadline.
Do you think voting is likely to stop at this point in Michigan or Pennsylvania?
Well, again, voting has stopped.
I'm right? Sorry. Yes. There counting is, of the ballots. Yes.
Right. Counting of ballots. So that seems unlikely. And in fact, we're getting mixed messages from the president and his campaign on this. First of all, in the states where the president is now behind, Arizona and Nevada, the president is very insistent that the counting continue. And even in Michigan, the message has been that that the votes should be counted. Instead, the objection there was to the process. And in fact, the president would need more counting to happen in Michigan, given that the president right now is behind by tens of thousands of votes in Michigan.
Now, the campaign also requested in the lawsuit to be able to review all of the ballots that were opened and counted up to this point. Is there precedent for that type of action?
So, you know, that request would fall under Michigan law. I think that the request that the president has made so far is quite vague. And the lawsuit, by the way, I haven't read the lawsuit itself. I think people have had a difficult time getting access to it. It wasn't even served on the other side immediately. But it was referring to having meaningful access. And it's not clear exactly what the president is arguing about fell short. I mean, Michigan has a relatively transparent counting process. It's a process in which there are both Democratic and Republican observers who are there. And so it's not clear if there are very specific instances where the president is claiming something went wrong or, you know, what really he's saying fell short. And so I think that we're going to need to find out more as, you know, maybe a court holds an initial hearing in that lawsuit.
We are talking with Rob Yablon, who's an associate professor at the University of Wisconsin Law School and an expert on election and constitutional law. And we're discussing the challenges that are starting to bubble up when it comes to the presidential election, counting of those votes in a highly contested race. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What question do you have about the process? What do you think makes sense? And when would you like to see a candidate take take action and actually figure out and question the legality of something that's happening in our elections process. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. We've got Anita in Lindenhurst, Illinois on the line. Hi, Anita.
Hi, this is a great show. It's addressing something I've been really curious about since before the election, because Trump was saying then that he had his lawyers all lined up and ready for the lawsuits that he was going to initiate. And so I understand that if it's a point apart, that the person who has the lesser score has an automatic right to a recount. That I get. But the other things that he's coming up with, like many different random things just to prolong all of this, in my estimate, I'd like to know who's going to pay for all of those legal fees and court fees. Who's going to pay for that? Is that coming out of his salary, which is taxpayers, or is it coming out of the Republican National Committee? Is it coming out of the Trump company? I'd like to know who's going to pay for all of that.
Anita, thanks so much for that question. And I heard Anita talk about the 1% margin. That's the rule in Wisconsin when it comes to the recount that the Trump campaign has floated, say that they're going to try to get. And they're allowed to do that under Wisconsin law if the results are within 1% of one another. But there are additional layers here about who pays for it, Rob.
Yeah, that's right. So in Wisconsin, given where we are with the margin, the Trump campaign could request a recount, but that recount has to be paid for by the campaign. And it's going to be expensive. There was a statewide recount in 2016 that cost about $3.5 million. And that will have to be paid by the president through his campaign committee, through the Republican National Committee, not likely to be something that would be coming out of his presidential salary or Trump corporate funds. But the Republicans have a significant amount of money that they have set aside for legal challenges. And if they wanted to pay for a recount in Wisconsin, they could, but it would not be cheap.
And there's a lower margin there where they wouldn't have to pay for it. Is that right?
That's right. If the results, I believe it's within a quarter of a percent, then the candidate doesn't have to pay for it. But we are outside of that right now. So if it's the margin is larger than a quarter of a percent, but less than 1%, the candidate can request it, but the candidate has to pay.
What would a recount in Wisconsin look like? What does it include as far as reviewing who voted or where the ballots were cast, absentee ballots? What's the breadth of this?
Yeah, as the name implies, it is a almost a do-over count where locality by locality, the vote counters will reconvene, and they will take a look at the poll books to make sure that the entries were properly made there. They'll take a look at the absentee ballots again to make sure that they were processed appropriately, that the formalities for the absentee ballots were followed, and that could mean that there are ballots that were initially counted that they'll have another look at and say, actually, there was a flaw with this one, or a ballot that was initially excluded that they'll say, in fact, this ballot should have been counted. And then they will do a recount, which could be by hand, or they'll run ballots through the machine once again. So it is a fairly painstaking process. That's one of the reasons why it is so expensive, because the campaigns are paying for the time of all of these individuals across the state to do it.
And what was the timeline on that?
So formally, the recount can't begin until the election canvassing process is complete in the state. And that might be another week or two. We don't know exactly how long that will take. It actually didn't get started in 2016 until late November. And then once it did get started, it took a little bit less than 2 weeks. And so we might be looking at that kind of timeline again. In some ways, the recount this time might be more difficult, precisely because there were so many absentee ballots that were cast this time. And it takes a little more effort to review and process those ballots than it does the standard in-person ballots.
Rob Yablon is an associate professor at the University of Wisconsin Law School, also an expert on election law. He's talking with us about the challenges to results that we're seeing specifically right now from the Trump campaign.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the legal options the Trump campaign has, or any campaign has, and if they're likely to have success in the courts? How do you feel about the direction of votes right now? Do you feel confident in the results reported so far and the process overall? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org.
This conversation continues here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Keeley Boltina. We're talking with Rob Yablon, who's an election law expert and an associate professor in the UW Law School, talking about legal action and challenges as votes continue to be counted in several key states when it comes to our presidential election. And what we have Zeke from Wisconsin Dells ready to join the conversation. Hi, Zeke.
Hi, Keeley. Thanks for taking my call. And also Rob as well. I've tried a number of times to get on, but never had success. And thank you to this Rob guy, the putting forth your knowledge, legal knowledge. And I assume these are non-billable hours, so I appreciate your time and efforts there, sir. The last call, Rob was also nice enough to hang up on that guy that was complaining about, the Trump loss and whatnot. But my question is simply this. Isn't the Supreme Court a review court? I don't have the legal knowledge that the chosen one does, of course. That you actually have to have a case that's been reviewed by a lower court before it can be heard by the Supreme Court. Isn't that a fact? I mean, how does the Trumpster think that he's going to get a case before the Supreme Court when there is nothing except the Pennsylvania case?
And Zeke, let me go ahead and jump in here. And I think Rob might have a little more context to what you're thinking about this, the U.S. Supreme Court. Rob Yablon.
So it is nearly always the case that the Supreme Court is a court of review, and so cases don't go directly to the Supreme Court. They work their way up from the lower courts, and so that would be the normal path. Now, in that Pennsylvania lawsuit, that's what happened. The case had started in the Pennsylvania courts, was decided by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court before the election, and was already in the U.S. Supreme Court, and so the president did have an opportunity now to attempt to intervene in that case. But at the moment, that really is his only direct shot at having anything reviewed by the Supreme Court.
So you could enter a lawsuit, but it doesn't necessarily have to go through every layer of the system to get to the Supreme Court, right? The Supreme Court has some discretion.
There is a little bit of discretion. There are ways for a case to jump directly from a trial court to the Supreme Court without stopping in an intermediate appellate court. The Supreme Court's preference, except when time limitations would prevent it, is to let the process play out layer by layer. Even in the 2000 election, we saw the case that became Bush versus Gore, that didn't immediately go to the U.S. Supreme Court. There was a significant litigation in the lower courts in the state of Florida, and that, you know, over the course of weeks, eventually made its way all up to the U.S. Supreme Court.
All right. Thank you for that. And thanks so much for the call at 800-642-1234. Rosa from Waterford is ready to talk with us. Hi, Rosa.
Hello. I noticed at around 1:30 this morning, President Trump was ahead over 130,000 points in Wisconsin. Excuse me, votes. And about 2 hours later, right before around 3:30 a.m., he jumped. He all of a sudden, Biden was ahead, and Trump trailed a little over 10,000 votes. So in a matter of 2 hours, President Trump's ahead 130,000 votes. 2 hours later, he's behind 10,000 votes. So I can understand why President Trump is demanding a recall. One other note I should mention, all of the other states, there was no movement. So I'm assuming that the other those states decided to stop the counting. I don't know if Milwaukee County decided. I don't know what the law is in Wisconsin. Did they stop counting after midnight, or do they keep counting into the late hours?
Thanks so much, Rosa. And it sounds like there are two points there. The first one we can clear up is that we don't stop counting votes in America just because it hits midnight on Election Day. There's no legal precedent for that, right, Rob?
That's right. I mean, it is common for vote counts to continue past Election Day. And there are some states, again, not Wisconsin, but others where ballots are allowed to come in after Election Day as long as they're postmarked by Election Day. And so what happened last night, the reason that the vote count shifted in that way, is that a significant number of votes came in from Milwaukee. And in particular, those were the mail-in votes that were being processed a little bit later because it is a bit more difficult to process those votes. And unfortunately, the law in Wisconsin is that election officials can't even begin processing them until Election Day. And so it was at that point in the night when that significant vote count was completed. And Milwaukee is a heavily Democratic area of the state. And we've seen similar shifts happen in other states, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania as well. It's just a function of where the votes are coming from and what kind of votes they are. Throughout the country, we've seen that the mail-in votes have been more heavily Democratic votes this time around.
All right, Rosa, hopefully that helps to answer your question, clear some things up about why that switch happened, and it was such a significant one. We're talking with Rob Yablon, who's an associate professor at the University of Wisconsin Law School, about constitutional law and the challenges in the legal realm that may be coming from this election here. And we've got Craig from Menominee on the line now. Hi, Craig.
Hello. Thanks for the show, and I appreciate the discussion. I just have a question about general election security. So I know we've heard a couple of reports. There was an official who was supposed to observe and was blocked out or something. But more in terms of the mail-in ballots, like when you go to vote at the poll, you get a sticker that says you voted. Well, you also know you voted because you put your ballot in the machine. Now, when you vote by mail, I mean, we definitely hope, I feel I can trust the Postal Service, but it is nice to know that your vote was counted as a fact. As, I'm just curious, has there been any discussion anywhere in the political or legal realm as to letting mail-in ballots know that they've been counted, or the citizens that have sent them?
Yeah, Craig, thanks for the question there, talking about election security. And Rob, we know we can track the ballots for absentee through the Wisconsin system, but what precedent is there for election security in our Constitution or the laws that we've passed?
Right. As a constitutional matter, there's nothing specific about it. Our statutory law in Wisconsin and our election regulations are much more specific to provide the kinds of safeguards that we would want. And they really are there. There is a tracking system for those ballots. And I should say there is a way for those folks who voted who voted by mail to check online to see if their vote actually was received. I'm probably not going to remember the exact website, but if you look at the official Wisconsin Elections Commission website, you could probably navigate your way there, and you can do a check to make sure that your vote properly was logged.
Yeah, and you can do that at myvote.wi.gov. We've also got that Track My Ballot link with our website. It's wpr.org/centraltime, as we've been having lots of conversations about this week and of course, in the lead up to the election. And Rob, Pennsylvania, in that Supreme Court decision, is able to count votes that are postmarked by the 3rd, but arrive up to 3 days after the election. And that's not the case in Wisconsin. Can you help us understand why there's a difference in different states?
Sure. You know, we run our elections in this country primarily at the state level, and different states adopt different rules by statute. The legislature passes different rules, and sometimes state courts will hold that different rules are required for state constitutional reasons. And so what happened in Pennsylvania was that the state Supreme Court held as a state constitutional matter that extension needed to be provided. In Wisconsin, there were some plaintiffs who went to federal court to try to get an extension as a matter of federal law. And at the trial court level, they succeeded, but the U.S. Supreme Court rolled that back and said that there was no federal constitutional issue that required the receipt of ballots after Election Day. And so, you know, you do have
a
mix.
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to jump in here. Rob Yablon is an expert on election and constitutional law. Thank you so much for joining us for this conversation.
Thank you.
I'm Keely Boltina here with Rob Ferret, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.